watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation with Professor Sanjeev Krishna from the Institute of Infection and Immunity in London. Now, Sanjeev, along with Pfizer's vaccine, we have many other vaccine candidates that seem to be on the cusp of approval. And I'm sure that this complicates the decision that policymakers around the world will have to make. How would you, Sanjeev, like policymakers to think that through and make the comparisons between these vaccine candidates, taking into account their local context?
That's a big question, Melissa. And I think the first thing to say is that the world needs a large number of vaccines, and no single supplier could supply them. The second thing to say is that, of course, the vaccines must be affordable and accessible. And part of that process also involves having different suppliers and also different types of vaccine. Now, you know, how does one deal with different vaccine types and different manufacturers? The answer is that they are all held to the same standard. So they all have to meet criteria for safety, for the fact that they work, and however that is defined, and also that the quality of vaccine production is good enough. And you know, each country has its own mechanisms. Sometimes countries are happy to take into account, you know, the regulatory results from another country. The European Union has a unified mechanism, for example. And these standards will be applied to every vaccine candidate that comes along, and each one has to be looked at individually.
Sanjeev, do you think there are specific issues that pertain to the global south, to the developed or the developing and underdeveloped worlds, in terms of their relationship to big pharma, their relationship to building institutions that have independence in decision making when it comes to regulation and you know, and choice when it for a vaccine candidate?
I think, Sharad, maybe you are referring a little bit to what is called loosely vaccine diplomacy. The way that the countries that manufacture vaccines or have industries that manufacture vaccines within them, how they are interacting internationally to deliver or to secure the supply of vaccines. And, you know, these are very complicated matters, of course, and they go well beyond an academic's framework of thinking. All I would say is that our impulse, our direction, is that safe vaccines, which work, really should be made accessible to the people who need them most. Because you know, Sharad, that one of the features of the COVID pandemic is that it has highlighted and exacerbated the differences between the haves and the have-nots, both within societies as well as globally. And so I think a vaccine stands the chance of being an equalizer, but it will only work as an equalizer if it is available to those who are the most deprived as well as everyone else. Because let's not forget, COVID-19 does not respect you know, any status in society.
Right. So the idea is to have the vaccine available to all. And I want to talk to you about, you know, this access to everyone so that everyone is protected. How do we think that through in dealing with, you know, perhaps segments of society that do not have access to the vaccine? I'm thinking about, in a Malaysian context, perhaps undocumented foreign workers, those who are stateless, or those who are even sometimes socially invisible. How would we deal with that?
I think this is a very important general question because, of course, whilst it applies to Malaysia, it also applies to many different parts of the world, you know, including perhaps developed, you know, well-developed nations. Now, the issue has to be that health cuts across all other societal barriers, in my view. So it must be made very easy for people who perhaps are undocumented to at least gain access for health reasons to vaccines such as this, and other healthcare as well. Because after all, you know, health is one of the fundamental human rights that we all deserve access to in terms of, you know, vaccines, in terms of good water, in terms of food, and so on.
Sanjeev, you know, perhaps the question of context, as say Britain or Malaysia, where you have a fairly well-developed public health system, the NHS in your context, here in Malaysia, but Malaysia also has a very mixed system with a lot of private, you know, suppliers of healthcare. And there's this issue. The government's already announced that it will provide the vaccine free of charge to all adult citizens. They will be provided at cost to, or at some cost to foreigners. The question is, do you think there might be a run on the supply, that there might in fact develop this real need, hunger, to kind of jump the queue to get these vaccines?
Yes, that's the natural human impulse, isn't it? Protect family, protect friends. You know, protect oneself. I think there is a bigger idea here, which is that we can't protect ourselves until we've protected everyone, and that's the nature of a pandemic. Because you know, if there are sections in society that aren't protected, that will always have repercussions. So if we start thinking with the biggest impact on society, and if we start implementing in that way, then I think we really will reap the greatest benefits for everyone.
Sanjeev, a quick question, and since you're a scientist and clinician, I mean, something that anti-vaxxers in Malaysia are already kind of beating their drum about, which is the methodology behind the Pfizer vaccine, that somehow it's going to affect our genetics, and that's something that's being put out there in social media. As a scientist, does that make sense at all, this conspiracy that we'll somehow perhaps grow horns as a consequence of taking the Pfizer vaccine?
My goodness, the misinformation gets more and more involved, doesn't it? Genetics in the human context in us is our DNA. The Pfizer vaccine is not DNA. It's RNA. And the RNA is just the instruction to tell the cells to make the right protein, which then allows the body to become immunized. And actually, if anything, it is one of the simplest routes to generate immunity, to generate a benefit from the vaccine. So mechanistically, there is no link between the vaccine and our DNA. And so really, that is very much in the category of misinformation.
Well, thank you so much for clearing that up for us. Now, we're going to take another quick break, but there's still so much to cover. So we'll come back and continue this conversation, Sanjeev. Stay tuned to Consider This.